Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Bob Breeze, the Energy Department's Chief Information Officer. Bob, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
It's great to be with you, Jason. Looking forward to the conversation.
So I know that you have been CIO now at the Department of Energy since about June timeframe, and wanted to let you get your feet wet a little bit, let you get situated now that you are. How are things going since the promotion?
Well, it's been awesome. It's been a wonderful time of challenge and opportunity, and I'm supported by a great team. So I'm excited to be in the position.
You were the deputy CIO. Before that, you were also worked at the National Nuclear Security Administration. Has it been a big change for you, or has it just been kind of the normal evolution that you could always see yourself going?
Mostly, it's been a normal evolution. I think, the biggest challenge is we're still working on hiring a deputy CIO. So I have the luxury of serving in both positions right now. I think it's a natural progression and a natural addition of new challenges to my career. So the biggest challenge I have is moving the organization forward and going from deputy CIO to CIO, not letting that just be an easy way to continue the status quo, but to use that as a milestone from which we can add further momentum to where we're headed in the future.
Now, how big of a difference is it to be from a deputy CIO to the CIO? I mean, obviously, it's big in the sense of the title, you're in charge, it all falls onto you. But from a day-to-day and operational strategy perspective, how big of a difference is it?
It's not a lot different. When Mike Lokaitis was here and I was his deputy, we shared a lot of responsibility and worked together very closely. And there were a lot of times when I was filling in for Mike in a particular activity, or Mike was doing something that someone may have said, well, it's kind of odd, why isn't the deputy doing that? And sometimes it was just where our point of interest or our expertise was. So it really hasn't been a big difference from that perspective.
And that's good. I mean, the continuity is so important. You hear CIOs, the old adage that CIOs only last 18 to 24 months. And what I've seen over the last, 10 or 12 years, that actually doesn't feel like it's real. When you talk to CIOs in government, they actually last a lot longer than that. Give me a sense from your perspective, since you've been at Energy now for a lot of the last several years. How much of a change are you seeing at the Energy Department from a technology perspective?
Well, I think we've seen a lot of change. I mean, I came to the department still on active duty back in 2003. So I've seen a lot of change from the beginning of BlackBerry deployment to the broad deployment of mobile devices and desktop video teleconferencing, more telework. So I think it's changed a lot in 10 years. In fact, it's changed a lot in the last 18 months, or almost 24 months since I got up into the DOE CIO's office.
And I think every agency, every CIO is facing that kind of change. Let's discuss your office a little bit. You said you've been up in the DOE CIO office for about 2 years. Discuss the makeup of your office, how many federal employees, how many contractors, and what was your budget for 2012?
We've got about 120 federal employees, and we're supported by a little more than 300 contractors. And those individuals are deployed in various facilities here in the Washington, D.C. area, in the Albuquerque, New Mexico area, Las Vegas, Nevada, and then by onesie-twosies in various other places where we have federal offices. The budget picture is a little difficult to completely explain. We're about $85 million in appropriated funds, but we do leverage a lot of DOE's working capital fund processes, as well as a lot of our desktop commodity computing efforts are fee-for-service. So we have a lot of customer revenue that comes in and pays for that. But from an appropriated side, about $85 to $90 million a year.
So your ratio is about 3-to-1. Is that a good ratio between contractors and feds, or is that something you're trying to maybe tighten up a little bit?
Well, I think right now it's pretty good. You know, as we look to the future and where we want to be in 1, 3, 5 years, that's one of the key pieces of analysis we're doing. What are the functions and the responsibilities that we really need to have federal employees do, and what are the activities where we can better leverage the flexibility and the innovation of the contractor community in the private sector. So that's something that we're analyzing almost each and every day as we make steps forward.
You also deal with the lab. Give me a sense of that relationship, because even though you, as you say, you know, you have about 120 feds, 300 contractors, when you add the labs in there who still kind of fall under the big DOE umbrella.
Yeah, our relationship with the National Laboratory, the plant, and the cleanup site CIOs, those management and operating contractor CIOs, is incredibly strong. We get together in person every quarter. We have monthly phone calls and a regular dialogue on topics of mutual interest, whether it's technology insertion, whether it's cloud computing, whether it's just IT governance, and you know, recognizing that you know, we are a government-owned, contractor-operated entity, I think that relationship is incredibly beneficial.
And from your standpoint now, you guys from the headquarters, as your role as CIO, are you developing, for instance, the strategy, the architecture, the standards, and then at the government-owned, contractor-operated sites, they're implementing what you're kind of calling for? Is that how it works?
That's a good rough approximation. We are in our IT modernization strategy, which was approved by all of our program offices and signed out as a department-wide strategy by our deputy secretary. We are moving forward to create those architectural standards under which we all agree to operate. And the labs and the plants are a big part of that. They're full partners in defining those, because what's critical is that where we have to connect with each other, where we have to share data smoothly and cleanly, is that we can do it in an effective and efficient manner without having to run through a bunch of black box translators because we're all on different systems and different standards. So that's a key part of it, and the labs are full partners with us in developing those future architecture standards.
And you talk about the IT modernization strategy. When was that signed out, and is it something that's public? We can find it online?
Well, it has been put out on the energy.gov website, and that strategy was signed out, I guess it was about September when it was actually signed by the deputy secretary. We've been working on it collaboratively for the past 6 or 8 months, all the way back into the spring of 2012. And it really focuses on three things: transform, protect, and advance. We want to transform our IT architecture into a very modern, flexible, cloud-based, where appropriate, set of solutions. We have to protect it each and every day and make sure that sensitive data is protected and that we can monitor the situation and know how to respond to incidents. And then the other piece in advance, that's where we really want to capture the best of industry, academia, the labs, and of government in being able to push the envelope further forward.
All right, sounds like we're getting to a little bit of your priorities. Let's take a quick break. We come back, we'll go jump into your priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Bob Rees, the Energy Department's Chief Information Officer.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbu. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Bob Rees, the Energy Department's Chief Information Officer. Now, Bob, before break, we got into your IT strategy, the new strategic plan that you guys put out roughly about September timeframe. Give me a sense of what you're working on. What are your top priorities over the next 6 or 9 months?
Well, the first is to modernize our IT infrastructure and to consolidate all of the disparate pieces of it into something that's more effective and more efficient for our employees. We are looking at how do we create sets of services that we can truly share with each other. Today, we still have too many email systems, too many customer relationship management systems, and things like that. And by consolidating these things, we're confident that we can use a brokerage model to take single services and deliver them into enclaves that are appropriately protected for each of our various missions, whether it be science, energy, or nuclear security, or the general functional administration of the department. So that's number one, is getting those efficiencies and those effectiveness improvements through modernization. A big enabler to that, and I'll list it separately, is the movement to cloud computing. It's critical that we be able to get there because we can't afford in the future and in this budget environment to keep up with where the industry is. And so we need to take advantage of their flexibility, their innovation, their ability to rapidly incorporate changing technologies and kind of deliver services both from a public cloud, hybrid cloud, and from a private cloud perspective. And again, going back to that cloud brokerage concept, broker those services from each of those types of clouds into an enclave that the individual user doesn't have to know where that service comes from, and that an individual program office doesn't need to manage the delivery of that service to the end worker. So the modernization in cloud computing. The third, even though some might argue, and I would argue a lot of days, is my number one priority, and that's cybersecurity. Over a year ago, almost 18 months ago, back in April of 2011, the department made a decision that we were going to consolidate all of our cybersecurity operational activities into a joint cyber coordination center, that we would create a nexus of consolidated reporting, all-to-all information sharing, shared analytics, and collaborative incident response, to where we can bring together the technical expertise of our labs and plants and of our federal employees in a real-time environment to protect ourselves, be aware of where we are on a day-to-day basis, and respond to incidents. And that's an incredibly powerful thing that we're doing. It's very difficult to get this done. There is a lot of ownership in cybersecurity, and it's important that as we move forward, that we don't do anything to reduce the level of security that we already have. We want to make it better in the end. We don't want to bring in any unexpected weaknesses. The fourth thing I would say is mobility. Freeing our employees from their desk and giving them the opportunity to work when, where, how, and on the device of their choosing is really important to creating an environment that can leverage the workforce of the future. So that's critically important to us, to move forward in mobility, desktop collaboration, and really also reduce our need to travel. We try to reduce the number of airline miles and car miles we put on our employees. Giving them those mobile solutions is critically important.
Let's start with that consolidation of the infrastructure, and then that will probably lead us into the cloud conversation more broadly. Are there specific areas you're looking at? A lot of back office things versus mission critical things? Is this where the commodity IT push from OMB comes in?
The commodity and the back office functions offer us a lot of opportunity, both in effectiveness and fiscal efficiency. So that's clearly at the top of the list. On the mission-critical systems, we're focused initially here in fiscal year 13 and probably into FY14 as well on our federal employee mission applications. And so a lot of those have been developed for specific program office operations. And having our chief architect, Rick Lauderdale, and our chief technology officer, Pete Cironis, work with those offices to come together and begin to sort through the functions in those mission-critical applications to understand where uniqueness is necessary and where commonality is sufficient is going to be critically important as we move forward.
Give me a sense how you're doing that. I mean, let's start with the commodity IT first, though. Are there certain areas you're looking at, like email, that's a very common one I hear, or collaboration, or even, obviously, data center consolidation is part of that probably as well?
Yeah, email is clearly one where we believe there are some easy wins. You know, almost all of us are on similar email platforms, although we're delivering them in multiple instances. So email is one. The standard office productivity tools, word processing, spreadsheets, presentations, those things, as well as the typical supporting applications, document management, those types of things. We believe there's a lot of opportunity there. Some of it can be done through enterprise licensing, enterprise-wide agreements, and improving the procurement process. Other is actually physically consolidating the back-end infrastructure and hardware. And as we do that, though, we have, through our governance processes, we have a group of commodity IT professionals that get together every month to sort through these issues to identify, hey, where is this a procurement issue? Where is this an infrastructure issue? And that feeds right into our efforts to consolidate server rooms and data centers and those types of things. And going back to that second priority on the cloud, you know, the cloud is a huge enabler for us to, as we move forward through this, to shut down server rooms, parts of data centers, put those elements into the cloud, and continue to free up resources on our end to innovate and to move forward. So, you know, once again, getting people together on a regular basis to talk through these issues, it's the communication. The technical issues are challenging. The communication issues are critical to work through those, to be able to modernize, consolidate, and move forward.
One of the things you mentioned was the consolidation of potential email and standard office productivity tools, maybe even some document management. Are you looking at an RFP or any kind of acquisition strategy yet?
So we're not to that point yet. We're still working through the inventory and kind of the strategic approach to where and defining the end state of where we want to be. And then after that, we'll figure out what the acquisition strategy is. You know, we do have a pretty broad set of contractual vehicles available to us today. So I think it would be premature to say there's going to be an RFI or an RFP at this point as we continue to really build out the specifics of that strategy that was recently released a couple of months ago back in August, September timeframe.
And, you know, if you did say there's an RFP coming just for discussion's sake, you'd get a lot of calls from vendors now, so you're probably better off being out in front of it saying no decision has been made yet. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk more of your priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Bob Breeze, the Energy Department's Chief Information Officer.
So, guess what I just heard?
You mean about the Roth TSP?
Okay, yeah. Well, also,
that bid protest on the DoD contract.
Right, but did you know
who the Senate confirmed for the administrator's job?
Well, what about
OMB's digital strategy?
Jeez, how do you know everything that's going on in the federal government?
I know, because I signed up for Federal News Radio's email alerts.
Be in the know and know it first with Federal News Radio's email alerts. Sign up today at federalnewsradio.com. Search email alerts.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Bob Breeze, the Energy Department's Chief Information Officer. Now, Bob, before break, we were talking a lot about your priorities. You were highlighting the commodity IT. You brought up the idea of a cloud. And one of the things I remember talking with the National Nuclear Security Administration's CIO, Robert Osborne, about was the cloud of clouds concept, something that he said he was working with your office on. I wanted to touch base, get a little deeper into the cloud as an enabler. What are you looking to do with this cloud brokerage model? Because that's a concept that I think is starting to grow across government. You've seen GSA, you've seen DISA put out RFIs around cloud brokerage. How are you guys working that model?
Well, we're partnered very closely with NNSA, and our cloud brokerage model was actually developed by one of our national laboratories in a partnership with some of their private sector peers. And the whole idea here is to free ourselves from the concept of a cloud where all we've done is co-located into somebody else's data center. What we want to do is provide flexibility in the services and solutions that our users have available to them. But we also recognize that our program offices and our functional offices, HR, finance, my office, for instance, we all have different tolerances for risk, but the underlying service, whether it be email, office productivity, customer relationship management, those types of things, those services can be the same. So the cloud brokerage architecture that we're building will be able to take those things and wrap them into enclaves of assurance, similar to a low impact, moderate impact, or high impact system, and be able to put the right security controls in place so that that worker is working in an environment where the risk is managed appropriately. So the technical solution, again, is one that we're developing with one of our national labs and some private sector partners to be able to take common streams of services and wrap them in the right security wrapper for that user to be successful. Again, I'll go back to what we don't want to do is simply relocate our infrastructure offsite. That doesn't really gain us a lot of advantage. We've got to be able to leverage the different services of public, hybrid, and private clouds.
One of the things you talked about, you mentioned the word enclaves a couple of times, and you explained it when you say a level of assurance, low, moderate, high. Can you maybe go in that just a little bit more? Is it the type of thing where if I'm working at my desk at the Energy Department headquarters, maybe my email's in the low enclave, but if I use it from through a VPN from a laptop computer at a conference, that may go through the moderate level VPN, or would everything go through moderate all the time, but that's the level of risk that my office, that my program office decided it needs to be?
Well, it's really going to be dependent upon your program office's mission and the type of information that you process. It's probably easier to think of this as from a programmatic perspective of our science, energy, and nuclear security programs. Our nuclear security programs, even in the unclassified environment, deal with a lot more information that is controlled unclassified information. And so they're likely to want more cybersecurity controls in place for their systems. In science, they may be working on open science issues, and so there may be a group of scientists or a group of science programs that need low assurance. But there may be others that need a little bit higher. Think also of, let's say that three labs want to create a collaboration and they want to create their own tri-lab cloud. The brokerage system would allow them to establish that, to create, as you mentioned, kind of a VPN between them for that specific collaboration, which may be permanent or it may be temporary. So as we work this with NNSA, we kind of envision this as there will be an overall NNSA cloud, but there could also be an NNSA lab cloud, an NNSA plant cloud, and those things can be dynamically provisioned depending on what the user is doing at the time. So it may actually be that a user is working in multiple clouds at the same time. He or she may be collaborating with another researcher, and that's occurring in a set of services wrapped in a moderate security enclave. They may be working on another collaboration on a more scientific side and working in a low assurance enclave. So it's dynamically provisioned based on the services and based on the people that are involved in that.
I think that's much clearer, because when you hear enclaves, you hear the process by which it's going to work, I think, is so important, which actually is a good segue to the next topic I want to touch base with you on, is around mobility. You talk about mobility as being a key, not to worry about which device, where they're working. And I think this type of cloud setup is probably a huge piece to that puzzle. So talk a little bit about your mobility strategy, where you're going with it, what you want to get done.
The first thing is by the end of fiscal year 13, we want to have a strategy in place that we can all agree to here within the department on how to remove device dependency from our mobile solutions. And that's going to be a challenge. And I think you've seen in other press releases and discussions with other agencies, we're all fighting that battle. It's difficult, but I think what we're all coming to the realization is that the end device, the end point, can't be the thing we're focused on. So we're going to focus on an MDM, a mobile device management solution, that gives us control on data and limits the amount of data that can be resident on a device. And there are challenges with that, because people may say, hey, but I have to be able to work offline. Well, that goes back to the whole risk management discussion of maybe you need to be able to work offline, and we have to provide you with a unique solution. But for most of us, we're going to work on a mobile device when we have access to the internet through either a cellular connection or a wireless connection, and you don't need to have the data on your device. You need to be able to reach in and work with that data using applications, but the data can stay in the data center. So that's where we really want to go with that, is to create that more of a glove box type approach to working with data from a mobile device. But I don't want to have to worry about whether you're on an iPhone, whether you're on an Android phone, whether you're on an iPad, or whether you're on a laptop. I want that data in my control, in my cybersecurity wrapper, in the appropriate enclave for the mission you're working on and the device of your choosing in the location of your choosing. That said, there are a number of things that we need to look at. One is when you come into our environment from a mobile device, is what device is that? Is that a device that we know and trust, or is it a device that we don't know? For instance, your home computer is one we don't necessarily know. If I issue you an Android phone, I know that device. Also, how are you coming in? Are you coming in through a VPN connection, or are you going to come in through some other type of connection? And then, are you coming in through cellular, wireless? Do I geotag that phone or that device? Do I know where you are? That location is inside one of my office buildings. I'm a lot more comfortable with you accessing my stuff from inside my building than if I see that you're accessing it from, you know, someplace in, say, the middle of Nebraska because you're out there on leave visiting your family. So the level of assurance, the level of authentication that goes into that mobile session may be different. Very complex, but I don't want to worry about endpoints as much as we deploy this strategy.
Now, you mentioned a couple things that I thought was fascinating. One of them was around knowing where you're accessing from and then also knowing what device you have. So that kind of leads me to the question of bring your own device. Is that something that you guys are not going to consider, or is that something maybe just much further down the road?
Well, it is something we want to consider, and I think that's why we also have to know how you're coming into the environment and from where you're coming. Bring your own device is very fashionable around iPads, iPhones, Android phones, those types of things. But for agencies like Energy that have enabled employees to access your email and your basic productivity solutions from your home computer, that's already bring your own device. It's just not mobile. So we have experience in bring your own device. We know how to secure those things. And now we just have to figure out how to transfer it to the smaller form factor.
All right. Sounds like we could talk for a long time more, but unfortunately we are out of time. So we were going to have you back on the show maybe 6 or 9 months and catch up on some of the other priorities and some, and get a status update and some of the other things. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today was Bob Breeze, the Energy Department's Chief Information Officer. Bob, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
Thank you, Jason. It was great to spend some time with you.
And a final programming note, Federal News Radio presents a special Ask the CIO with a live online chat immediately following the program. Thursday morning, January 3rd at 10:30, join me, Jason Miller, as I sit down with Charlie Armstrong, the Assistant Commissioner and Chief Information Officer for the Customs and Border Protection component of the Homeland Security Department. Then at 11, immediately following the program, stick around for a live online chat. Join the conversation live or send in your question in advance at federalnewsradio.com, search live chat.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.